and 200 ears were carefully listening. He played back his own words in the echo chamber of his head. He'd said, "I'm here to tell you." He spread out his hands and waved them frantically. "That it's not up to me to tell you anything," he said. "That is correct," said Two Fire Herb. "We will overcome because history is on our side."
"We will overcome because the great wizard is on our side," said Butterfly sharply.
"I'll tell you this," shouted Rincewind. "I'd rather trust me than history." "Oh, shit, did I just say that?"
"So you will help three yoked oxen," said Butterfly.
"Please,"
said Lotus Blossom. Rincewind looked at her, and the tears in the corners of her eyes, and the bunch of awed teenagers who really thought that you could beat an army by singing rousing songs. There was only one thing he could do, if he really thought about it. He could play along for now, and then get the hell out of it at the very first opportunity. Butterfly's anger was bad, but a spike was a spike. Of course he'd feel a bit of a heel for a while, but that was the point. He'd feel a heel, but he wouldn't feel a spike. The world had too many heroes and didn't need another one. Whereas the world had only one Rincewind, and he owed it to the world to keep this one alive for as long as possible. There was an inn. There was a courtyard. There was a corral for the luggages. There were large travelling trunks, big enough to carry the needs of an entire household for a fortnight. There were merchant sample cases, mere square boxes on crude legs. There were sleek overnight bags. They shuffled aimlessly in their pen. Occasionally there was the rattle of a handle or the crack of a hinge, and once or twice the snap of a lid and the bonk, bonk, bonk of boxes trying to get out of the way. Three of them were big and covered with studded leather. They looked like the kind of travelling accessories that hang around outside cheap hotels and make suggestive remarks to handbags. The object of their attention was a rather smaller trunk with an inlaid lid and dainty feet. It had already backed into a corner as far as it could go. A large spiked lid creaked open a couple of times as the largest of the boxes edged closer. The smaller box had retreated so far its back legs were trying to climb the corral fence. There was the sound of running feet on the other side of the courtyard wall. They got closer and then stopped abruptly. Then there was a twang, such as would be made by an object landing on the taut roof of a cart. For a moment, against the rising moon, there was the shape of something somersaulting slowly through the evening air. It landed heavily in front of the three big chests, bounced upright, and charged. Eventually various travellers spilled out into the night, but by then items of clothing were strewn and trampled around the courtyard. Three black chests, battered and scarred, were discovered on the roof, each one scrabbling on the tiles and butting the others in an effort to be the highest. Others had panicked and broken down the wall and headed out across the country. Eventually, all but one of them were found. The Horde were feeling quite proud of themselves when they sat down for dinner. They acted, Mr. Savaloy thought, rather like boys who'd just got their first pair of long trousers, which they had done. Each man had one baggy pair of same, plus a long grey robe.
"We've been shopping," said Caleb proudly. "Paying for things with money. We're dressed up like civilised people."
"Yes, indeed," said Mr. Savaloy indulgently. He was hoping that they could all get through this without the Horde finding out what kind of civilised people they were dressed up as. As it was, the beards were a problem. The kind of people who wore these kind of clothes in the Forbidden City didn't usually have beards. They were proverbial for not having them. Actually, they were more properly proverbial for not having other things, but as a sort of consequence of this lack, also for not having beards. Cohen shifted.
"Itchy," he said. "This is pants, is it? Never worn them before. Same with shirts. What good's a shirt that's not chainmail?"
"We did very well, though," said Caleb.
He had even had a shave, obliging the barber, for the first time in his experience, to use a chisel. He kept rubbing his naked, baby pink chin.
"Yeah, we're really civilized," said Vincent.
"Except for the bit where you set fire to that shopkeeper," said Boy Willie.
"No, I only set fire to him a bit."
"What?"
said Mad Hamish.
"Teach?"
"Yes, Cohen.
why did you tell that firework merchant that everyone you knew had died suddenly? Mr. Savaloy's foot tapped gently against the large parcel under the table, alongside a nice new cauldron. So he wouldn't get suspicious about what I was buying, he said. 5,000 firecrackers?
What?
Well, said Mr. Savaloy, did I ever tell you that after I taught geography in the Assassin's Guild and the Plumber's Guild, I did it for a few terms in the Alchemist's Guild?
Alchemists? Loonies, the lot of them, said Truckle.
But they're keen on geography, said Mr. Savaloy. I suppose they need to know where they've landed. Eat up, gentlemen. It may be a long night.
What is this stuff? Said Truckle, spearing something with his chopstick.
Chow, said Mr. Savaloy.
Yes, but what is it?
Chow. A kind of, dog.
The Horde looked at him.
There's nothing wrong with it, he said hurriedly, with the sincerity of a man who had ordered bamboo shoots and bean curd for himself.
I've eaten everything else, said Truckle, but I ain't eating dog. I had a dog once. Rover.
Yeah, said Cohen. The one with the spiked collar. The one who used to eat people.
Say what you like. He was a friend to me, said Truckle, pushing the meat to one side.
Rabid death to everyone else. I'll eat yours. Order him some chicken, Teach.
Ate a man once, mumbled Mad Hamish. In a siege it were.
You ate someone, said Mr. Savaloy, beckoning to the waiter.
Just a leg.
That's terrible.
Not with mustard.
Just when I think I know them, Mr. Savaloy mused. He reached for his wine glass. The Horde reached for their glasses too, while watching him carefully.
A toast, gentlemen, he said, and remember what I said about not quaffing. Quaffing just gets your ears wet. Just sip.
To civilization.
The Horde joined in with their own toasts.
Pacharn cough.
Your feet shall be cut off and be buried several yards from your body so your ghost won't walk.
Lie down on the floor and no one gets hurt.
May you live in interesting pants.
What's the magic word? Gimme.
Death to most tyrants.
What?
End of CD 4.